Our third case for this morning is Mucha v. Village of Oak Brook, 10-2000. And whenever you're ready, Mr. Marconi.
May it please the Court, my name is Jerome Marconi. I represent the applicant, Randy Mucha. As you know from reading the briefs in this case, the issue is whether there are facts in the record when viewed in the light most favorable to Randy Mucha, that there's a tribal issue as to whether or not there was probable cause for Sergeant Mucha's arrest. The starting point in this case would be the statute under which Sergeant Mucha was charged. Under that statute, and the complaint is in the record, the state must prove that Randy Mucha requested a criminal history based upon false pretense. False pretense is another way, or used interchangeably with impermissible purpose.
But I wonder if you've actually even overstated it. It's probable cause. The state doesn't have the burden of proving things at the probable cause level. They have the burden of showing that there are enough facts at their disposal that they had probable cause to arrest him. So that's different from proving. So they had to have probable cause to think that he had conducted this search of the records for inappropriate reasons. And I guess what I wanted to ask you is, even if we assume that the arrest warrant itself was too brief and cursory to provide that probable cause, didn't Sheriff Sheehan have enough to satisfy the probable cause criteria?
In this case, it would be Chief Sheehan.
Chief Sheehan.
Who is sure. Sheriff Sheehan's brother.
Okay. Sorry, too many Sheehans.
In this particular instance, and I agree with you that probable cause is an entirely different standard than proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which the state would have to prove if it went to trial. The question to the jury, or where a jury conclude, is that based upon what happened during that 1 week prior to February 1st of 2005, when Sergeant Mucha asked the dispatcher to determine whether or not Francis Gake had a criminal background, the facts are undisputed that Sergeant Mucha wasn't doing an internal investigation. There's plenty of paperwork on that. Acting Chief Larson assigned it to him. There was information that Officer Kadoff came to Sergeant Mucha and said, this person, Francis Gake, called me at home. It was a Saturday. She called me on my home number, and I'm concerned about the safety of myself and my family.
So, well, but I guess in some ways the question isn't whether there are facts that would favor Sergeant Mucha. I think it's what facts were available on the other side to make them think that a violation of this statute was happening. So Chief Sheehan knows that Mucha is conducting this internal investigation. He knows about this local advocacy group. He knows that Mucha has videotaped somebody parked in the library, knows that State's Attorney Joe Burkett is not ready to press charges. But he also, doesn't he know that Mucha has lied to him on a couple of occasions? He's lied about contacting Ms. Gike by email under this assumed name, and he's failed to disclose that he runs the check. I mean, there are facts going both ways, aren't there?
The issue with regard to the Gike descending the email was not known to Sheehan on August 16th. What happens in that case is that during the May deposition, Randy Mucha says, I don't recall sending an email. Then he goes home, looks over his records, and says, I did send this email, and then they do an amendment to the interrogatory. They do an amendment to...
Right, which completely flips it, of course, you know, from saying, I never sent anything, to saying, yes, I sent something under the assumed name Linda Lucinda.
Right, right. But Sheehan did not know about that on August 16th, and that was not contained in Officer Weber's report either, where Weber was supposedly doing the investigation. So Mucha did not lie to Chief Sheehan about sending this email regarding Linda Lucinda. In fact, it was never brought up even in the disciplinary charges, and I cited to the findings of the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, she never even went after Mucha for this purported lie. And I think if you look at the Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, they're the ones that regulate discipline. They're the ones that have the expertise in what officers can and cannot do. They came out and said that because of the information known to Mucha at the time where he asked for Gake's criminal history, he had a right to do so. It was permissible.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm trying to sharpen the question, really, because what he's arrested for is the misdemeanor violation of the Illinois statute, right?
Correct.
And so the question is there probable cause to think that he ordered that search of the records on Ms. Geik for impermissible reasons, even if there's also some information available to the police that maybe he had a permissible reason? But is there enough to make a probable cause that this was so we know that he doesn't like this local advocacy group that Geik is running, and that he's posted by this time, hasn't he, on the union's website, his response to the things that she's writing?
Response, Sergeant Mutual was the webmaster, so he would have been the one that posted it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess because we're dealing with probable cause is something that requires us to approach the facts from a somewhat different point of view. We're not asked to make the ultimate decision that the police board made or that anybody else was making.
But even if you look at the bad facts, the two things that are brought out is, number one, this Linda Lucinda email that goes to the group. And it basically is, I'm interested in your group, I'd like to join. It's not harassing, it's not going after her. The second thing that was mentioned were the Smithies, who were citizens that went in to the meeting and then reported back.
Meeting, yeah.
And during all this time, Sergeant Mucha now is sending emails to the village manager, advising the village manager and the mayor what's going on. And I think the concern here is, who is this person, Fran Gake, and how is she getting internal police documents?
But why does that entitle him to go into the criminal records? I mean, that's the issue. Did he violate this statute? Did he fail to go through the appropriate procedures for this criminal record search on her?
There's nothing in the record about appropriate procedures. All that you need is a triggering event. That's what Heidi Parent testified to before the Border and Fire Police Commissioners. A triggering event is officer safety. And Sheehan, if you look at his deposition transcript, he says, Kadoff tells me, or I learn, that Kadoff has a fear for his safety of him and his family. Sheehan also says, now I'm going to go back to his testimony before the Board of Fire Police Commissioners. Sheehan testifies, hypothetically, that if an officer learns that a citizen possesses internal documents, which may contain home addresses, telephone numbers, it would be the responsibility of the officer to determine whether or not that person has a criminal history.
Isn't there some chain of authority? Do people at the sergeant level initiate all investigations like that in Oak Brook?
Well, in this particular instance, and the BFPC mentioned it, in this printout that they received, I think there was at least 15 different police departments requesting information about the Gakes. I think there are 11 other Oak Brook officers that were requesting information about the Gakes. When Sheehan does the investigation, he highlights the line involving Randy Mucha and then gives it to Weber. And he doesn't even bother with the remaining Oak Brook officers who were running the plates of the Gakes. And another thing, too, I think
does
that...
Does the same statute govern running plates as...
No, I don't think it does. I think there's a difference between running the plates, but still... Chief Sheehan said it would have been a violation for an officer to sit and run plates for their own personal curiosity. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it doesn't rise to a criminal level, but it would have been inappropriate.
So you wouldn't arrest somebody for that. In other words, you might discipline them within the police department, but you wouldn't arrest somebody.
Right. So the focus was on Randy Mucha at that time. Also, Sergeant Mucha testified that Gake was seen driving through the parking lot at odd times during the day, and he said, I just needed to put the rest, whether or not this person was a criminal or whether my officers were feeding information or consorting with a known felon. I think another thing that was known to Sheehan that's very obvious, you know, there's a lot of incendiary facts against Mucha saying he hates this group and he's going to go after this group and he's harassing this group. You have to keep in mind that his inquiry was just Fran Gaik, not the Gaiks, not Mr. Gaik, not Mr. O'Malley, no one else in the group. There was one person, Fran Gaik. And the reason for that is because that's the information that he developed during his investigation. And I do think it's powerful evidence where Sheehan himself admits that a responsible officer would try to find out whether or not that was a criminal.
Okay, if you want to save any rebuttal time, you might.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Murphy.
May it please the Court, good morning, Your Honors. John Murphy for the defendants. Judge Wood, following up on your line of questioning, I think the district court correctly assumed for purposes of why we're here today that Mucha had a pure heart. That, of course, is not the issue. The issue is whether it was plausible for our objective, reasonable police officer on that date and time to conclude that there may have been a violation of the statute, meaning did Mr. Mucha run that criminal history for personal reasons unrelated to a law enforcement endeavor? And the answer to that question is yes.
What are we to make of Chief Sheehan's omissions of significant items of information from the warrant application to the judge and also his bypassing of the assistant state's attorney?
Two things. In terms of the omissions to the judge, if the court determines there was probable cause at the outset, we don't have to get to the warrant. But in our view, Your Honor, the claimed omissions are not material to the determination.
It was a bare-bones criminal complaint, no facts. The chief did not disclose to the issuing judge that the defendant was a police officer engaged in an investigation of this group.
The chief did not disclose one way or another the identity based on the, you know, giving Mucha the benefit of the record. But why is that material?
How is that not material to the issuing judge's determination of probable cause in the context of this case?
Because the swearing by the chief was that the officer was obtaining the individual was obtaining the criminal information under false pretenses, namely, he was engaged in a personal activity as opposed to a law enforcement endeavor. There is no evidence that Sheehan had notice that Mr. Mucha was engaged in a law enforcement endeavor at the time he ran that plate. I think a lot of the sequencing is important in this case, Your Honor. And of course, the statute itself is broadly applied to any person. And looking at the warrant itself, as we mentioned in the brief, it says that Randy Mucha directed a communications operator at the Oak Brook Police Department to run the name. So,
but the chief didn't identify him as a police officer on his staff
there,
with authority to make those requests
there
for
is
records
no,
checks.
Excuse me.
I would have wanted to know that if I were the issuing state court judge.
Your Honor, there's no evidence really on that one way or another.
But that's the problem. You know, there is no evidence, and you say in your brief, well, you know, he must have, or the issuing judge must have inferred that he was a police officer because who else could direct the communications person to run that check? But unfortunately, at least this court sees plenty of cases where it's somebody's next-door neighbor or their lover or whatever. I mean, we don't know on the face of things why that person ran the check, and it's a highly relevant fact that it's a police officer.
If it's relevant, I don't believe that changes the facts that were in front of Sheehan at the time when the decision was made that Mr. Mucha plausibly violated
the statute. But the state judge might have said, oh, it's a police officer. Was there anything else going on? And assuming that Chief Sheehan is going to tell the truth, he would have to say, well, as a matter of fact, there's an investigation into whether people are loafing on duty and otherwise not performing their functions.
Well,
Right. I mean, contextually, this was not just a random records check. And the issuing judge probably would have wanted to know that and know the context.
It was, that is correct, Your Honor. It was not a random records check. It was intentionally done for one of two reasons, either because Mucha was investigating something or because he was engaged in the vendetta, in the First Amendment violation that was right in front of everybody, front and center at the time Sheehan made this decision. Keep in mind that this printout from the state came in response to a discovery request in the Gake litigation. Keep in mind that the village manager, once this was turned over by the Gakes lawyers and making public allegations of a violation, turned it over to the chief to investigate. The chief investigated. His sergeant said there was no criminal matter involving Mrs. Gake in February of 2005. What we do know is that there was First Amendment activity on the part of Mrs. Gake in February of 2005, and we believe, most importantly to this case, Your Honor, when the supervising officers asked Mucha, did you have any legitimate reason? Did you have any reason to run Mrs. Gake? Mucha said, untruthfully, not that I recall. Now,
and that's before the arrest warrant? That is before the arrest?
Yes, Your Honor. Prior, after the officer, the supervisor, conducted the investigation, spoke to the dispatcher, identified that it was Mucha who did the CQH.
When he's speaking to Lieutenant Weber.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
They call him on the phone, Randy.
Yeah.
Is there any reason that you would have run Mrs. Gake? Now, keep in mind, Your Honor, this Gake lawsuit.
This is a year and a half later, roughly.
Only 10 days, however, Your Honor, after Mr. Mucha recanted his testimony in the Gake litigation regarding I am Linda Lucinda and all of the other things that was going on. So this was a hot thing in Oakbrook at the time, obviously. And Mr. Mucha had the keys to the kingdom at that point. Yes, I was investigating this Zelasco matter. Yes, I was doing this internal investigation, and I wanted to make sure Mrs. Gake didn't have a criminal background. Had that occurred, Judge Sykes, and had Chief Sheehan not told that to the judge, that Mucha offered up an explanation, that would be a material omission. Under, I think most recently, you were on the Parkey versus Sample panel, which describes what's a material omission. But in this case, Your Honor, Mucha lied, and he admitted in his deposition that he lied about that. He said he lied because he didn't want to get in trouble. He thought they were ganging up on him. But, of course, to the reasonable police officer on August 16th, the fact that the subject did not take the opportunity to exculpate himself would lead a reasonable police officer to conclude that Mr. Mucha may have violated the statute, combined with everything else. He had a motive.
So the arrest comes the very next day, right?
Yes.
After this Weber conversation.
Right. They made the decision rather than to do it themselves. I mean, there was no obligation to obtain an arrest warrant. Rather than do it themselves, they went to a judge to get the...
But it's so strange that they're really unhappy, I guess, with what the state's attorney... The state's attorney people are saying, look, you know, let us do a proper investigation here. There are conversations between Chief Sheehan and State's Attorney Burkett, right?
Yes. There's an important sequential thing here, Your Honor, I'd like to emphasize in terms of our oral argument. Sheehan met with representatives of the state's attorney in early July. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on with Randy Mucha. This matter, the running of the criminal history, did not occur till 3 weeks later. So the initial contact between Sheehan and Burkett's office dealt with a wide range of activity, excluding this matter. It was only
the printout comes 3 weeks later when they find
out. 3 weeks later, yes. Separate violation. Sheehan calls up Burkett. What's going on with the overall investigation? We accept Burkett's version for purposes of summary judgment that we need more time. We're not going to do it. We're not going to make a felony official misconduct arrest now. So the conversation between Burkett and Sheehan dealt with kind of the global Mucha problem.
Well, this is obviously part of that.
It was part of that.
And so it's highly unusual that he would sort of freelance this and go outside the auspices of the state's attorney's office and go to the judge himself for a warrant and to file a criminal complaint. Well, wouldn't the ordinary procedure go through the state's attorney's office?
The ordinary procedure on a misdemeanor arrest could involve the police officers just arresting the man.
Well, I understand that, but that's not what we've got here. He's prepared a complaint and sought an arrest warrant. Usually that would be done in conjunction with or through the state's attorney's office.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor. Police officers go to judges all the time to seek a search warrant, an arrest warrant for any number of violations.
To file a complaint directly?
DuPage is a great place.
I guess.
Well, Sheehan was faced with a decision. Sheehan thought he had evidence of a criminal violation now. I guess one of his options was to just throw it into the hopper with everything else that was going on. But at the same time, a reasonable police chief could conclude, I've got all the stuff going on with Randy Mucci, the First Amendment lawsuit, all the other things that I have discovered about him. Then I get this dropped in my lap. What should I do? Nothing? I guess that was one possible alternative.
So to take it back, though, I mean, our issue is a narrow one, which is whether there was probable cause to think that this search of the criminal records violated the Illinois statute, whether it was done for personal vendetta reasons or whether it was done as part of a legitimate investigation. And I think I'm hearing you say that there are enough problems with the arrest warrant. I won't hold you to that, but there are a lot of problems with this arrest warrant. But you're also arguing that there's probable cause in any event, right?
That is correct, or for qualified immunity purposes,
qualified
the arguable
purpose.
Probable cause because of Mucha did it. She and supervising sergeant who did the investigation told Sheehan that on February 1st, Mrs. Gake was not the subject of a criminal investigation. Keep in mind again, Your Honor, February 1 was a month before Sheehan got hired as the chief of Oak Brook.
We're talking about 2005.
2005, excuse me. So Sheehan knew that Mucha did it. Sheehan knew that Mucha was in this running battle with Mrs. Gake that was being splayed out in district court. Sheehan knew there was no criminal investigation involving Mrs. Gake at this time. And Sheehan knew from his subordinates that when Mucha had the opportunity to take himself off the hook, he chose not to. I don't know. I don't remember. But he did remember and he did know, and he made a conscious choice not to tell the boss that I was doing an investigation at that time. It wasn't my First Amendment thing. It was my law enforcement thing. And that makes all the difference in the world. At that point, Your Honor, to get back to your core point, at that point, a reasonable police officer had arguable probable cause that as between Mucha as law enforcement officer and Mucha as a personal First Amendment defendant, the choice was personal. And that's why he ran it, and that's why the man was arrested. The matter that counsel keeps bringing about at the BFPC, which is like the Civil Service Commission, that was several months later. So, of course, that's in terms of this inquiry, our objective inquiry, is neither here nor there. What happened? Because were that the case, then evidence that a criminal trial comes into play, and, of course, all your cases say that that doesn't happen. So if I could just touch 1 minute on the malicious prosecution thing, that's kind of the procedural issue that's dangling. I think both sides are in agreement, but for opposite reasons with respect to the malicious prosecution claim. Judge Hart declined to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over the malicious prosecution, and there was a defamation claim. Obviously, the malicious prosecution arises out of this set of facts.
But you didn't file a cross appeal. And the district judge chooses to dismiss both of those state claims without prejudice and to relinquish supplemental jurisdiction. I don't see without a cross appeal how you can get more, that is to say, with prejudice, than the district judge gave you.
No, but if the court...
I don't think this court can convert this to a dismissal with prejudice without a cross appeal.
I would accept that.
I mean, it's proceeding anyway in the state courts, right?
Actually, this one is not because they have not They have an appeal on all the matters that were dismissed a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. All of those claims have been dismissed, and actually my brief is due today in the second district, so I'm almost done. But this one, because of the pendency of the appeal, theoretically plaintiff's one year catch-up to file in state court hasn't lapsed yet until this matter's final.
Okay.
Thank you, Judge.
All right, thank you. Anything further, Mr. Marconi?
I wanted to just follow up with a couple comments by Judge Sykes. And I'm aware that Judge Sykes wrote the Whitlock opinion, which I think is right on point here, because this court held or commented in the opinion that an affidavit for an arrest warrant, which was bereft of facts, does not establish probable cause. And I think, Judge Wood, you brought up the fact that if you're the judge sitting there, wouldn't you want to know that Chief Sheehan met with your brother, Timothy Diamond? He's at traffic court talking to a traffic court judge. Wouldn't you want to know about the internal investigation? Wouldn't you want to know that Officer Kadoff was concerned about his safety? Wouldn't you want to know that the basis for the charge or false pretense, if you have a triggering event, officer safety, then that's not probable cause. No crime has been committed. These are all facts that are material that a judge might, and I'm missing the biggest one. I just got off the phone with Joe Burkett, the state's attorney for DuPage County, who said, Chief, give me your file and any workup, and I'll make an informed charging decision. Wouldn't you want to know that as a judge, that you're speaking to the top prosecutor in DuPage County, and Sheehan lies about it and says, no, I have not talked to the state's attorney. I haven't talked to your brother. And Weber was standing there. The only thing he gave him was two pieces of paper to this traffic court judge and says, I want a warrant against this Randy Mutcher with his home address for requesting a criminal history. Let's go to the bad facts that you asked me about I send this Linda Lucinda email to this group. I send the Smithies in. Subterfuge would be another name for it. Isn't that what police officers do on a regular basis? Randy's posed as a 14-year-old girl on the Internet to try to find pedophiles. They pose as drug dealers. They pose as drug purchasers. It's not that unusual. And the question is a jury, when a jury hears these facts, a jury can conclude, well, you know what, it doesn't matter. We can separate what Randy Mutch is doing to try to find out what's going on with Frank Gake from what Sheehan is doing in terms of going after Randy Mutcha. And I agree, or I think it's clear that malicious motives are not part of the probable cause analysis. However, it does explain, when it comes to qualified immunity, why would Sheehan tell members of his department that it'd be career suicide to associate with Randy Mutcha? Why would he threaten sergeants with physical harm if they associated with Randy Mutcha? I think that all goes into the mix about Sheehan's motivations. Was Sheehan motivated to go after Mutcha? Of course he was. And again, going back to Whitlock, I think all of these facts are material to the probable cause determination, and you can't withhold facts which would negate probable cause, and all of those facts would negate probable cause. And I think based upon that and based upon the clear law that if there's a difference of opinion, if a jury can have a difference of opinion as to the facts, that's a jury question. And that's all we're asking for in this case, is to give Sergeant Mutcha his day in court, because there was no probable cause. There were no false pretenses. And I don't think there was ever false pretenses even listed in any of the briefs. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.